Hello and welcome to the Agricultural Economics Podcast. This is Jessica Eyes, and I'm here with my co-host, Ken Foster, Dr. Ken Foster, the head of the department. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing well, Jessica. Good morning. Today is the date of the 41st Annual James C. Snyder Memorial Lecture. We have the wonderful opportunity to speak to the guest lecturer.
Indeed,
exciting activity.
But before we introduce Dr. Helen Jensen a little bit more, can you just tell us, what is the James C. Snyder Memorial Lecture?
Sure. Jim Snyder was a faculty member in agricultural economics at Purdue. I guess maybe I should go back. He was actually a graduate student in the department at Purdue in the 1960s and won the Outstanding Dissertation Award given by our association, and so I think one of my predecessors as department head said, this is a bright person, they've got a lot going, we should hire them as a faculty member, and so they did. And so he stayed at Purdue as a professor, had a very distinguished but short career. Unfortunately, Dr. Snyder passed away quite young. His legacy really lives on if you look at the department and our focus in agricultural business. The Center for Food and Ag Business is very much a direct result of the things that Dr. Snyder started as a faculty member here, focusing on applying strong analytical and management principles to agricultural businesses. And so we have been celebrating now for over 40 years his legacy in the department with this annual lecture.
That's a great memorial to him.
It is,
testimony to his impact in a short life.
And, you know, his Mrs. Snyder will be with us this afternoon at the lecture. She has been, I think, to all of those events and continues to come.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks for that historical background. And
sure.
Now let me take a moment to introduce our guest, Dr. Helen Jensen of Iowa State University, who is discussing today during the Snyder Lecture an economist's perspective on policies to target nutrition and dietary choices, which seems rather timely for current events and
what's being discussed
in our national climate. So welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I look forward to the day.
Indeed. Yes.
Maybe you can just give us a few highlights on what you're going to talk about, what you're going to try and teach us this afternoon, Helen.
Well, I'm going to talk about things that interest me.
That sounds like a great idea.
This is, I have had a great opportunity to take what interests me in academics, economics, and apply it to other areas that interest me, which is in food and nutrition related problems. The way that I've been doing that recently has been active involvement in the process of looking at what's the science out there about nutrition and food, and how can that be best applied in the design of policies and programs, particularly the U.S., but it certainly has relevance in an international context as well, both in developed industrialized countries as well as countries that are developing.
What are you working on? Are you working on anything in particular right now?
Right now, I am a member of the Institute of Medicine committee to review the WIC program. WIC is Women, Infant, Children Supplemental Nutrition Program, and designed to provide a package of foods to women who are pregnant or breastfeeding or postpartum infants and young children. And it's really a challenging but very successful program.
I can only imagine. What drew you to this field of all the things you could have studied?
Well, of course, I started as an undergraduate and was very much influenced by some faculty that were instrumental in opening up the challenges of programs that are applied economics, poverty programs, and from there migrated my way through academics from thinking that I wanted to study one thing to ending up studying what I did.
That sounds like how most of us live life, actually.
Well, it sounds like a good formula for how to build a career, and yeah. Helen's been very successful doing it. Maybe some of the younger student types out there listening to our podcast should take some notes on that.
Yeah.
So Helen, in all of your research and investigation of these policies and things related to our nutrition and maybe some of our good and bad health habits, what's a surprising thing that you've discovered in your research?
I think that one thing that I found is it's really hard to change. That is, you can have the best intentions of cutting back on whatever, and it doesn't always work when offered a very nice combination of that chocolate cake with ice cream on top or not, or whatever it is. I do think that this is a very interesting, that this is a time where economics too has changed to look at what really is motivating the way that people make decisions. How might the marketplace change? I've been impressed, or one of the things I've learned is how responsive businesses, food manufacturers have been to changing composition of foods, to offering new products. And they have a whole fleet of people looking at marketing, so we should learn from them too.
So sometimes, Helen, when we read in the newspaper and the popular press, people suggest that as consumers, we're being manipulated or deceived or tricked into doing things that aren't in our best interest. Any thoughts on that? I mean, how would you respond to that perspective?
Well, there's a very well-known center at Cornell that looks at behavioral approaches. And I don't know that they would say what they teach is trickery, but they can nudge, cajole, push, encourage people to do the right thing, or tell them afterwards why you might have taken that extra piece of candy or eat more soup than you wanted to.
So as we're both land-grant university professors with some sort of mandate to help educate people, what can we do to help people inform themselves about their own best interests?
Well, I think that, first of all, we should step back and say, should we be telling them? And who should we be telling? And there may be a difference in what you do for children versus adults. So the school environment might be important. But the other is to really look at what we're trying to do, which is improve public health. And what are the most effective ways to do that within programs?
What is the most effective way to do that within a program, for instance, WIC, which you're working on right now?
It turns out programs are different, and most of the programs in the nutrition area are voluntary. Excuse me. And so voluntary means we have to encourage or incentivize or help people make the decision to both participate, and then when they participate, to do what we want them to do. In WIC, we can motivate people to participate, and it's an interesting program because once they participate, they also have some choices. Am I going to use the benefits that are offered? I don't have to fully utilize them. I can throw them in the trash. I can probably give them to somebody else. So those are some... we need to make the programs attractive enough, and sometimes that requires putting more investment in the program and making the benefits even bigger so that they can capture the attention of the participant.
And you said that WIC has been a great success. Can you tell us how and maybe even how you measure the success?
Good question. Mm-hmm. So there are different ways of measuring success. One is, do people participate? Because if they aren't participating, they're not getting even the chance to do better. Mm-hmm. And WIC has very high participation for some groups, particularly infants. More than half of the infants in the U.S. are in WIC or have been in WIC.
That's really great to hear, considering the impact of nutrition on early development.
Yes. So there, getting participation works. The nutrition community would say, well, we also want those infants to be breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And that's where the challenge comes in, because if you look at, well, what incentives can we offer to get people to mothers to change practices for a long time. And that is really the challenge, that the infants don't have much choice.
Yeah, they're infants happy. Don't have much choice on many things. Actually, probably even on birth. I don't
know. Not much.
Yeah. So getting the mix right. In the old program, that is before 2009, the benefits of getting formula, which is very expensive, far outweighed the benefits that you got, the can of tuna fish or the carrots, that you got if you were a breastfeeding mom.
Okay.
So one thing we can do is change the mix of benefits to direct, are we giving benefits that appeal and will be sufficiently attractive to get people to participate and do the behaviors that we would like to see. So one of the programs that I've worked with a bit is a school meals program. And it had been a long time since I had been in an elementary school lunchroom. I don't know if you've been there recently, but it is chaotic. It is affected very much by the physical environment of the lunchroom and the few monitors that are there that make sure that the kids sit down and don't save the seat for their best friend, but allow anybody to sit down and things like that. And we had been working on school meals and menus about how, well, let's have fruits and vegetables and whole fruits with the school meal and whole grain this and limit calories or whatever. And I watched a class of fourth graders come into the room. And it was hectic, it was loud, it was boisterous, it was fun. And I watched a little boy make a macaroni sandwich with his whole grain roll. And he had, I forget if he had any teeth in the front. That was maybe he was a little younger. And that whole grain macaroni sandwich got eaten right away. And he just did not have time for the lovely pieces of apple that were sitting there before he dashed out to recess. So I think that we really need to look at lots of pieces of the puzzle on designing how we implement these great changes that we can come up with.
You can lead a horse to water.
That's right. You know, the school lunches are so important. My daughter was, she taught for Teach for America for 3 years in inner city school in California. And so this is somebody who grew up in, you know, upper middle class, Midwest. I mean, she really never wanted for very much as a child. So when the winter holiday was approaching, and her memories of December, 2 weeks off of school, were this is an exciting time. So she came to school, and she's like, wow, you know, next week is vacation for 2 weeks. Isn't this exciting? And her kids were not excited at all. And when she started to quiz them, what she discovered was these were kids who were getting not only lunch at school but breakfast at school. They were getting ready to embark on 2 weeks of almost no meals. And so the school lunch program, school breakfast program, is a huge thing in some of these low-income areas.
And the kids just don't eat. What the children eat.
It is what they get fed.
I think we're learning that there are some programs for summer mm-hmm. meals, and also sort of backpack
right.
for weekends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. A backpack for the kids to take home on the weekend.
Yeah, we got some programs like that in Indianapolis. Peyton Manning, when he was in Indianapolis with the Colts, started a backpack program for kids over holidays and summer to help keep them fed. Yeah, great ideas. Any final thoughts, Ellen?
I look forward to the day and am happy to be here. No?
We're so grateful that you came. Again, this is Dr. Helen Jensen, and we're really grateful you came this afternoon to honor Jim Snyder's memory. Keep doing the great work that you're doing.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to a Department of Agricultural Economics podcast from Purdue University.